Shabbat Shalom. Oh, I always love that. What's that? That's everything, yes. I was at the Lundgren's last night, and I was blessed by not being asked to share a message last night. And then this morning, you know, after getting a good night's sleep, then it was put upon me, hey, do you have a message, you know, so that... this guy over here, Mr. Lundgren, put that on me. I thought, well, I sure had a lot of time to prepare. but it's, I guess, if you have something to share, you don't have to prepare ahead of time. It's just what God gives you. So without further ado, I have written down the things that God has given me in the last 5 minutes. So this morning, in response to what Mr. L had said to me, Noach actually said, well, don't we all have something to share? And he, as a matter of fact, So when I thought about that, that's actually the same response I typically have. Well, yeah, I've got something to share, but I don't really know what it is or how to put it all together. So I guess I sort of have to rely on God to do that all for me, which makes sense. So in the backroom discussion, this is a fast forward to like whenever we had that discussion. We're discussing the Torah portion, and it was asked, why did they fear? Why did the Israelites fear when they were leaving Egypt in the wilderness and all of the things that they needed? And I always come up with like this first immediate response in my head to just I just don't even think. I'm like, well, they just weren't faithful. That's it. Questions answered. But then the discussion continued. Of course, I didn't say that because, I didn't have enough faith to say that out loud. But then it was asked, what is it that they want and what do they need? And, Dean actually responded with something along the lines of to have a perfect relationship with God. And, yeah, I guess in a way that is true, at least of people who are believers or have faith. They both want and need to have a perfect relationship with their Creator. And I was immediately brought back to my past when I wasn't really into the I guess what people might call the Christian scene or what have you. I believe that there was a God, but I didn't have a relationship with him, but I still did things, like pray, because, if you pray, that's all that you need to do, right? The things that I actually ended up praying most every night was that I wanted to love and be loved, and wouldn't you know, now that I'm here, I've had all those prayers answered, but back then, as a teenager, squandering my life, I tried to find it in all the wrong places, and I'm very glad that that's over. But so that's all I've ever wanted was to love and be loved, and I didn't end up finding it back then. But so recently, I noticed that in every detail of every interaction with you guys, that is exactly what I find is the love that you guys have for me. And it's in that way, I kind of feel, well, then that must mean that God loves me and he is doing those things through you and in you. And so like recently, it's in like every small detail too. So recently I was added to the TTP message group for evangelism, And just the fact that I was included in something that I really wasn't, you know, I didn't even know was there or being done, it made me feel a part of this this bigger family that we all have here, and I'm very grateful for that. So, I tried to do reading through the messages and everything to try to kind of get a grasp exactly what was going on. But, it's things like that, being included, it's like a huge sense of belonging. And, hey, thanks. but then I think about, what about for those people who, going back to the people in Israel being delivered from Egypt not having faith, I thought, well, what about those people who are undelivered? How do they ever get set free from their own slavery without an individual like Moses, without God's appointed one to be there for them? And after being briefed on last night, actually, after being briefed on like the whole purpose of the TTP evangelism group and understanding the things that it has already accomplished, because I'm pretty sure it's like relatively new, right? 1 month, yeah, so in my head that's really new. The things that it's already done, people, going out and escaping their comfort zone just to talk to people and pray for them and what have you, it's like, that's a big thing for me. Well, at least for you guys and me, vicariously. And I just think, well, you guys must sort of be the individuals that God has appointed to deliver these people from their own slavery and actually understand what it means to belong and know God's love for them in their lives. And I think that's a beautiful and wonderful thing. And I if there's anybody who isn't just rejoicing and jumping out of their seats for something like that, then do so. So the way I see it is, you guys are actually bringing, you're bringing the face of Yeshua to these people. They're seeing their actual Messiah in your actions and interactions with them, and the gift that they're receiving out of that is they no longer, like me, no longer have to search for that love or for that sense of belonging. And I'm grateful for that, and I expect that they also will be grateful. Please continue to do so, because the one thing that the dead really need is to be alive, and I have found life here. And I expect that in the next couple of weeks, this whole place is going to be filled with all of the people that you have brought God to. That's what I hope, anyway. And if it doesn't happen in a month, then maybe 2 months, and then so on and so forth. But keep doing what you're doing. I don't really have, or in my own judgment of what I've said, an actual message for you to change your minds or anything, but I wanted you to know that I feel very strongly for what's going on and for what you're doing, and I think that we are not a stagnant group, but one that is ever moving forward. Thank you.
So we're reading about the Exodus now. Not right currently, but we are in the process over several weeks of reading through it. So that's what I meant. Which I'm looking at a different way this year, because I'm sort of going through a process of Exodus on a personal level from some mental and emotional struggles. So I'm thinking about it in a different way than I have before, which is a good thing. And the Exodus I'm going through sort of in my own life is also a good thing and would not be happening without God's grace and various advice and support and encouragement from people that he's placed in my life. So the one thing I was thinking just now about what I could share is that Exodus is a process of change, and change can be really hard. But God is always there, and God doesn't change. So when change is hard, we have God to rely on. So when I'm frustrated, or I have a bad attitude, or it's just really hard to deal with whatever's changing, whether or not it's in my control, God is there and God isn't changing, and God doesn't have a bad attitude, and God isn't having a hard time with any of it. So it's not easy, but I think, you know, remembering that is one of the best things we can do when dealing with Exodus in our own lives and those around us.
This is Psalm 16. Preserve me, O God, for in you I take refuge. I say to the Lord, you are my Lord. I have no good apart from you. As for the saints in the land, they are the excellent ones in whom is all my delight. The sorrows of those who run after another god shall multiply. Their drink offerings of blood I will not pour out or take their names on my lips. The Lord is my chosen portion and my cup. You hold my lot. The lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance. I bless the Lord who gives me counsel. In the night also my heart instructs me. I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be shaken. Therefore my heart is glad, and my whole being rejoices. My flesh also dwells secure. For you will not abandon my soul to Sheol, or let your Holy One see corruption. You make known to me the path of life. In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore.
Father, I thank you for every person here, and I ask you to shower your blessings on them and make us all permeable to the things that you're pouring out. We wouldn't stand with an umbrella that repels your rain, that we would drink it up, Lord, and spring encouragement and comfort, wisdom and direction, vision and a sense of wonder at you and your world and what you have done for us, what has been and what will be, what we're expecting, Lord, which is the return of your Son. We're expecting the completion of all that you've begun. New heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells, Lord, we're expecting that. And I ask that you would cause us to be faithful and to cling to our confidence, to cling to the truth until the end of the journey, that we would all be there with you, walking with you from this day until the end. We know that you've provided what we need, Lord. I ask that you breathe on us today. Cause us to believe in what you want to do through us and in us. And we thank you. We thank you for your mercy. And I ask you once again for your help in Yeshua's name. Amen. So when Craig was talking, I did not put it on Craig to share anything today. Now, Craig and I have this history. Actually, it starts before that, but I'd sort of almost make a joke about him sharing when he would come to visit. And he would take it so seriously. And the one time, might have been the first time, he was staying at our house. He stayed up till 3 in the morning getting ready for, I mean, I kind of meant what I said to him, but I was also sort of joking. I say it sometimes to other people. But Craig, something happens when I say it to him. So it happened a few times, and then I began qualifying things, and then I thought I made it clear this time that I was just asking him if he had something, because if he did, he was free to share it, but there was no requirement. I was not trying to pressure him or cause anything to happen. Didn't I do that, or did I not do a good enough job?
I don't remember you saying anything like that.
Now, there are 10 commandments at least, and one of them might be in jeopardy there. So I'm tempted to ask everybody if they could think of one word to describe Craig, what the word would be. But this is maybe too personal. During the Oneg? That's what you think of when you think of Craig? So, what strikes, there are things about Craig to admire and emulate. I think I aspire to be as grateful a person as Craig is. What strikes me about Craig is he is grateful. And Craig has been through a lot in his life. He can tell you about it. Maybe he doesn't think it's so much, but I think it's quite a lot. He's a grateful person. He's very grateful for what God has done for him. And that always, along with his, disarming sense of humor and all of that, it's always like he's an uplifting soul to be around. And that's what the Lord wants to make us all into. Now, not necessarily just exactly like Craig. You don't all have to seem like Craig. You can seem like yourself and be uplifting. And that is exactly what we should seem like, is ourselves in Yeshua. So you mentioned something, Craig, about Moses being a deliverer and something about people, perhaps people here, being deliverers. Remember that?
Yes.
Do any of you think of yourself as Moses in, we could call it miniature? You're sent somewhere. Maybe you didn't even know you were sent. You ended up there. You thought you just decided to go. But maybe you're actually sent. And I would, by the way, suggest that we try to think of ourselves as sent to the places that we go. Even if it seems like we weren't exactly sent. The Lord has people he's put in our paths. He's sent us on a journey. And so perhaps we should think of the people who cross our paths as people that we were sent to. And maybe we've been sent like Moses to bring deliverance. Moses on, in a human sense, as the deliverer, but we all know God was the deliverer. He is the deliverer. But he sent Moses to work works of deliverance with his own power, and he has sent us to do that. And so you feel the little Moses inside of you? Feel a little... Somebody said something about perfection. Was that you? Greg? So, there's something about relationship, I think. So, I was wondering how many of you have a perfect relationship with the Lord? Only on Thursdays. That's quite an answer. Do you have a perfect relationship with the Lord? Well, what is it that we've been given through Messiah? We've been given what? Yes, and what?
Salvation.
The Spirit. What? A new name. How do the scriptures describe the new self? The descriptions of the new self don't contain flaws, do they? Doesn't include flaws in the description of the new self, does it? What kind of relationship does Yeshua have with the Father? Perfect? So, he washed us clean. His righteousness has been imputed to us. What does the one line say? You are the righteousness of God. We've been given the merit of Messiah. I don't want to overspeak, but we've been given the relationship that the Son has with the Father. We've been brought into it. We've been given that through the work of the Son. We are related to the Father in the way that the Son is related to the Father, because the relationship he has with the Father and his righteousness has been given to us. All of that is perfect. We have that. It's not, I'm not saying we are, as we are at the moment, in every way perfected. Not saying that the perfect has come in the ultimate sense of the consummation of all things, but it's coming, and that also belongs to us. But see, the thing is, we can't come to the Father at all without perfection of some kind, can we? There's a perfect sacrifice made for us. How much sin and filth can you bring with you into the presence of the Father? Can anyone answer that? Does everyone agree it would be none? If you agree it would be none, raise your hand if you would. Okay, so how many of you then can raise your hand and say that you can come into the presence of the Father? So if you can come into the presence of the Father, there must be some perfection that's been given to you that allows you to come into that place. Do you agree? So the thing is, when the Father looks at you, what does he see? Does he see the perfection of his Son worked in you, the righteousness of his Son given to you, the cleansing that the Son bought with his own blood worked out in you because you've been washed in the blood, so that makes you clean? Is that what the Father sees? Is that what you see when you look at yourself? I mean, I feel like I'm almost walking on a very dangerous line with some of the things I'm saying. I don't want to encourage anyone to become proud and think, oh, I'm perfect and, you know, I can't make a mistake. It's got nothing to do with that. But the thing is, if we are the righteousness of God because Messiah dwells in us, then we have to be able to think of ourselves that way, don't we? The scriptures wouldn't say such things and then ask us, but don't think them, would they? The scriptures want us to believe that such things are true. That when we've been washed clean, we're actually clean. That if we've been given power, that we have power. If we've been given gifts, that we actually have those gifts. If it's the Father's will that we be fruitful, then we're going to be fruitful. If abiding in the vine causes the branch that abides to bear fruit, then we're going to bear fruit. And yes, we can argue with God, we can do wrong things, we can be tempted and stumble, but that doesn't change what God has done. It doesn't cancel out or erase what he's done for us. It may put some trouble for the sake of discipline to teach us endurance and perseverance and how to avoid snares into our life. But that's part of God working all things together for good. No credit to us if we sin and God brings about good for us by teaching us through his discipline about why we shouldn't sin and its results. It's no credit to us. But the thing is, God sets out to do his work and he continues it despite all of the things that we may stumble in, misunderstand, or our own arrogance or pride or hubris or whatever pops up at some moment to cause us to do things like calling fire down from heaven and then nothing comes, which I know someone that did that at a conference. I sometimes am not sure who has committed a worse transgression? Somebody that gets so full of themselves at a certain point that they actually call fire down from heaven and it doesn't come. So that's a bad thing, you know. If you're actually going to do such things in the Lord, they better happen, and they better happen for the right reason, right? But then, which one is worse? Never calling for anything so that there's no embarrassment, so that you're never wrong, never stepping out, never taking a chance. Which one's worse? If you don't call fire down or whatever else in faith, knowing that you're walking with God, no, it's just a pretty big error. Very serious one. And it gets noticed. It will be recorded in history. It will be repeated. People will remember it 20 or 30 years later. But they don't always remember the moments when you or I did, well, nothing. And how righteous and good is doing nothing? Isn't it quite a transgression at some moments to actually do nothing? So which one's worse? Anyway, you could be the deliverer that God has sent to someone. It could be a whole group of people. It could be an individual. It could be an individual here or there. And you might need to part some little stream that can be stepped across with one step so that they can get their way across it. Does that sound silly? I mean, what you've been given to do, or I might be given to do, it might seem really small to us. We might think it too small to bother. I got to say, though, if somebody parted a little creek that I could step across without getting my feet wet, I'd still be kind of impressed that they parted it. I might say, well, you know, I can step right across that thing, but it is kind of notable that you did that. Where'd that power come from? I think sometimes we think that the thing in front of us isn't big enough. And then a lot of the time we think it may not be so big, but we're not big enough, even so. So the other night we went to Walmart. What an idea. Whose idea was that? That was my wife. My wife has a lot of good ideas. We went to Walmart to evangelize. Walmart, huh? So how do you do that? What on earth is going to happen when you arrive at Walmart? You going to get kicked out? Well, getting kicked out is not the most fearsome thing. That's not really such a big deal. But talking to someone there, now that might be a big deal. How's that going to happen? And then we discover all sorts of different dynamics. I was with Judah and Jacob, and then I sensed, I don't know if I sensed myself or if I sensed something about them or if I just sensed something. And I said, oh, you know, maybe we should split up. Maybe you guys had just gone. I'll just, you know. And Jacob heartily felt that, yes, that was a good idea. And so I went off to, I figured then they didn't have to worry about doing whatever they did in front of me, as well as whoever it is they were called to do it in front of. And it did seem like the Lord for us to split up. And did you end up praying for two different people? Can you imagine, you go to Walmart, we went shopping, by the way, we were all going to buy, I don't know, maybe everyone bought something, except I didn't end up buying anything, because it was so much, the time was gone, and so I'm going to go back and buy it later, because we're not going to loiter, we're going to use their building for God's work, then we're going to buy something so they at least made some money. We're not going to do it, you know, just take advantage, right? So they ended up talking to people and praying for people, and some of the others, I don't know if I can recall everything. And was anybody like afraid or anything? Anybody acknowledge any discomfort or insecurity, or anybody hear whisper in your ear saying this is not going to go well? You're going to make an idiot of yourself. You know, I think I told everybody afterwards that I couldn't remember a day when I felt less like just starting up a conversation with somebody in a store in the last 5 years. I start conversations with people in many places that I go to. I was not always able to do that, but it comes sometimes too easily to me now. So, anyway, I split up and I wasn't real sure. I was actually at one point hoping the time didn't run out on me before something happened. And then I'm thinking, well, do I have faith for anything or not? Am I, you know, just walking around standing here thinking, oh man, nothing's going to happen. God can't make anything happen. I wasn't actually thinking that, but I did feel a certain something, you know, going on in myself. And, you know, we have our human nature, and there's an enemy that's always trying to stop us. He can get us to feel really insecure. He can get us to tell ourselves negative things, that nothing's going to happen, that it's going to fail. He can choke us up pretty well if he can get us to go along with that. I don't even remember what I asked, you know, but we prayed before I went out there, but I just asked, you know, for something, and I made my way through quite a lot of the store, and then I ended up in the sporting goods section, and by the camouflage, and there was two guys looking at some camouflage, and one of them picked some out, and I was gonna just start something, but it wasn't really coming to me what it was that I should start exactly. Anyway, then they started walking away, and the first guy, he was all tattooed and everything, and I went his direction, but he went that direction, and I went his direction a little, and he went another direction. I didn't want to seem like I was chasing him, so I let him go. Later, I ended up trying to help him find the jerky because I kept running into him, and I thought, well, maybe this is the guy. He certainly looks like he needs the Lord. Anyway, all I did was try to help him find the jerky, and I wasn't successful. But when these guys started walking away, this is the slowest tone I heard come out of this one guy's mouth. They both had beards, and they're relatively young. I heard, "Nobody knows the trouble I'm seeing." Just that come out of his mouth. And I thought to myself, you know, some say it thundered. Some said it thundered. You remember, you know that line? Some said the disciples were drunk. And I could have said, that could have come out of anybody's mouth any moment, any day. And I thought, whoa, there it is. So I just followed him around the corner. I said, were you just singing, "Nobody knows the trouble I've seen"? And he goes, "Nobody knows my sorrow." I said, "Do you know how that continues? That nobody knows but Jesus?" And I said, "Is that? You think that's true? That nobody knows the trouble you've seen but Jesus?" I think he said, "Maybe, you know, maybe it could be." So anyway, I had quite a conversation with them. I said more in those few minutes than I normally say in quite a long time because I knew I didn't have much time. But they were both pretty skeptical. I think you would call them skeptics. But I testified to some things. The other guy gave a rebuttal, but this guy, Ken, he was willing. I said, well, if God is there, and if he sent his son, and if Jesus really does know, and he cares about you, would you want to know? And he said, well, yeah, I think I'd want to know. So I asked him if I could pray for him. And he said yes. And then I asked him if he would mind if I put my hand on his shoulder, and he said, not so much. And I said, you wouldn't mind so much, or you? Anyway, it was the negatory, so I said, that's fine. So I prayed for him. And then that the Lord would just reveal himself to him. The other guy's grandmother taught Sunday school. He grew up with her. And then I asked them if either one of them were interested in continuing the conversation, you know, like another point. And they both made it very clear that no, they were not. But see, the thing is, I think the conversation is going to continue without me. I thought, really, we're going to go to Walmart? Aren't there better rivers for me to take a bath in? Isn't there the creek right across the road? Why do I have to go bathe in the Jordan? You know, why that? And I didn't think much of that, but, you know, all kind of things go through your mind. And the battle, really, the battle to be won is the one in here. The whole battle is in here. It's not Pharaoh. It's not how strong Pharaoh is. It's not how many chariots he has. It's not whether you're enslaved to something. It's none of the circumstances. It's not the surroundings. It's not how high the mountain is or how deep the valley is or how wide the river you need to cross is. It's none of that. It's all kind of irrelevant. Because the obstacles are not the obstacles. It's all here. It's won or it's lost in here. It's whether we believe the one that we believe in. Things are won and lost in the mind, and what is going on in the mind comes out of the mouth, and what comes out of the mouth can lift other people up and encourage them and help them move forward, or it can help to melt their hearts along with yours. The battle is within, and that's where the battle must be won. If the battle within is won, then everything else is going to go as it should, even if it doesn't look like it should. So, or like we think it should. So, I said something funny. There's a couple of places in the Torah portion where the Israelites more or less sort of call for death. It seems like it gets worse. One of them's in chapter 14, but then one's in 16. And it actually paints God as the one that kills. It would have been better if the Lord had killed us in Egypt while we sat by the flesh pots, while we ate our fill of bread. The first one, it's like, is it because there aren't any graves in Egypt that you brought us out here to kill us? But then they're actually saying, it would have been better if God, the God that came to deliver us, had just snuffed us out back in Egypt with our bellies full. I do wonder sometimes how much they ate. Maybe they did eat to the full the way they described. I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe there were plenty of fish and there were leeks and onions and garlic and they loved all that stuff. But they don't include anything about the condition they were in when they say better if God would have killed us there. They just describe it as an ongoing, like, Roman feast or something. And they leave all the misery and the death and everything out, but call for death from God's own hand instead of believing. And they have so much evidence that God can handle it all. I'm just going to read you part of Colossians 3, I think. If then you have been raised with Messiah, seek the things that are above, where Messiah is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things that are above, not on things that are on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Messiah and God. When Messiah, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you: sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming. In these you too once walked when you were living in them. But now you must put them all away: anger, wrath, malice, slander, and obscene talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. Here there is not Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free, but Messiah is all and in all. Put on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassion, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other, as the Lord has forgiven you. So you also must forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Messiah rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Messiah dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Yeshua, giving thanks to God the Father through him. If we do that, if we believe the one that has spoken, then we know we've been delivered. We know we have a new life. We know we have a new self that we have and are putting on, and that because God has brought us into the ministry of reconciliation, that he's sent us with deliverance to people who are groaning in their slavery and oppression, and that he's going to release them from it by the power of his Son's blood and resurrection and the Spirit that he poured out. Because of that, he's going to bring deliverance also to people that he sent us to. And something about caring and being available to other people who are in need that makes one's own complaints and suffering and the things that seem so important and pressing shrink, even sometimes fade away, because the meaning of life is relationship, and our calling while we're here is to bring that relationship to people that need to hear about it. So it's a glorious thing that we've been made to be part of. And let love increase and let love do its perfect work. I thank you, Father, for this group of people. I ask you to use us. Help us to have the right point of view. Help us to sense what time it is. Help us to see in the faces of people around us the suffering and the need, and fill us with the compassion of your Son, that it would move us to do your will. We thank you, you've given us what we need. We ask you to bring us forward, teach us, strengthen us, encourage us, and show us just what we've been given and just what we have to give, and bring us to maturity. We give you glory. We thank you. In Yeshua's name.